I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for choosing this KAXE-KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. It is time now for the Border News Roundup, Friday mornings. At this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Good morning, Marshall.
Well, good morning, Heidi.
Let's take up the issue that just kind of won't stop being news, and that's the story that you broke, the IRRR story of Joe Radinovich. And I wonder if you can tell us what has happened since you first broke the story.
Yes, well, it's gotten a tremendous amount of attention. I was sort of really surprised. I mean, I thought that it might get picked up a little bit by some of the other media in the state, but it really got picked up and has been kind of one of the issues was it was sort of the first mini scandal, I guess you could say, of the Walz administration. So I think that's one of the reasons that it was there was some interest in it by other media around the state. And as a result of it, there have been a number of things that have happened. Joe Radinovich, who was the individual who had been hired by this process that looked kind of sketchy, he ended up announcing his resignation. This was late last week. And at the same time, Governor Tim Walz issued a letter of reprimand to Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Commissioner Mark Phillips. And he was the one who had really kind of, you know, pushed through that hiring of Joe Radinovich, and in a way that obviously raised a lot of questions about the fairness of the process. And this wasn't a political appointee per se. This was actually a permanent state position that had been created. It appeared to have been created specifically for Joe Radinovich. And the process that they used for making the selection or the hire was very much circumscribed. They reduced the posting time from the usual minimum of 7 days to just 24 hours. And then as a result of data practices or information requests that we had made, we found out that they had produced an organizational chart that reflected the new position. This was produced a week before the job was posted, and it had Radinovich's name written in already. So it sort of belied their claim that this was somehow a fair and competitive hiring process. And there were a lot of other issues that came up. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, some of the media have definitely focused on this story, and also that lawmakers have decided that they're going to take action. I mean, Governor Walz did, of course, right after the story came out, he announced that he was going to be instituting a policy that set a minimum of 21 days for posting any state permanent state position, and only under rare circumstances would any exemption to that be allowed. And lawmakers have since, in both the House and the Senate, on a bipartisan basis, have included legislation or provisions within the state government finance bill, which is moving through the legislature right now. They've attached language that would enact Walz's policy change actually into law, so it would require a minimum of 21 days posting. It would also further ensure that all managerial positions at all state agencies have to be awarded through a fair and open process where all qualified candidates are given full consideration. I think as a result of this, there may be some real positive changes in how the state goes about this kind of hiring in the future.
It's one of the few times something pretty quickly happened that could be made into law. That was kind of good to see as well.
It was, yes.
Well, let's move on to another story covered by the Timberjay this week having to do with the State of the Band address. It was the Boys Fort Tribal Chair, Kathy Chavers.
Chavers.
Yep. And she talked about priorities for the coming year. What did you find out?
Well, actually, some of her priorities were probably to be expected, and there was one surprise there for sure. She announced that one of their top priorities will be land acquisition, and of course, you know, we think within the boundaries of a reservation that it's all tribally owned land, but in fact, there's in many cases the tribe may own relatively little of the land within their boundaries. In many cases, there's private ownership within their lands that have been sold over the years, and so they're trying to reacquire as much of that land as possible. I mean, Kathy said that their long-term plan is to try to acquire all of the land within their reservation boundaries. And their two primary reservations, of course, would be the Vermilion sector, which I think they own most of that land. It's the Net Lake Reservation, which is a big chunk of territory, but there's a lot of other holdings within that are not tribally owned. One of the biggest would actually, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribes owns quite a bit of land, and the Boys Fort Band is trying to acquire that for their own use. And then also a Potlatch, which is now called Potlatch Deltic, I believe, and they mostly just have land holdings here in Minnesota now, and they have quite a bit of land on the reservation. And Shavers announced a 10-year plan to try to acquire as much of that property as possible. And they're kind of focusing on lands that they identified as having particular value for timber harvest, for hunting, or lands that are around their boundaries. They'd like to have, you know, their whole, they'd like to have ownership all along their boundaries. I think that would be useful for them as well. So that's, you know, one of the priorities. They're also looking at focusing on workforce development. She talked about the fact that the tribal government itself has got a lot of jobs available that they're not able to fill in many cases, at least with band members. And so she says they need to invest more in building up the skill set of some band members, and also just addressing the issues that they might have, whether it's chemical dependency, things like that. She says if we can work with these folks, get them healed from whatever chemical issues they might have or mental health problems, and then get them some skills, whether it's, you know, building resumes or doing an application for a job, things like that, finding them additional training. They want to set up a workforce center that would be kind of a one-stop shop for all of these, all this type of help to make that available to band members. And then kind of leading off of that, of course, is dealing with the opioid and alcohol issues that they have on the reservation. And, of course, that's an issue everywhere. But, they have a problem with it there as well, and they're trying to address that. And they've gotten money to help that in a number of different ways. They're improving their court system. They're also providing additional resources to the Boyce Fort police, and then they're also looking at trying to expand treatment options for band members by creating a center, which they have some land over near Ely, where they'd like to create a kind of a treatment and healing center for band members. So, some pretty ambitious ideas, and it all sounds like pretty positive stuff. So we'll be following that, of course, over the course of the next few years to see how that all plays out.
We'll move on to another story covered by the Timber Jay this week. Kind of a sad story, recovery of some remains at a campsite from the Boundary Waters. Tell us what they found.
Right. Well, at this point, they're not exactly sure what they found, but this was both St. Louis County Sheriff, the Forest Service, and the St. Louis County Rescue Squad. They were responding to basically to the discovery of a campsite. This was discovered on April 5th. And this was believed to be the campsite of a 29-year-old man from New Mexico who had come up in the late fall, late October, and had parked at a trailhead near Lake Leander. And this is on the far western, northwestern edge of the Boundary Waters, up closer to Crane Lake, actually, than to Ely. He had apparently gone out with the intention of camping over the winter. At least that was what he told Forest Service folks at the time. you know, the Forest Service had tried to find his campsite at one point earlier this year and had been unsuccessful, and they finally did locate the campsite on April 5th, and they found a lot of blood, but they didn't find anything else. But there was deep snow still at the time, so they held off and came back late last week to go back in there and search some more. And they did find remains, which they believe are human, but they're having that tested right now in order to determine that. And it's not that the remains were scattered. So what we don't know at this point, you know, is whether or not the individual is subject to an animal attack or whether he died from other causes and then was scavenged by the animals in the area, most likely wolves. So, you know, there's still some interesting, potentially disturbing questions here to try to get answered. So we'll be following up on this story for sure.
Before we go, let's talk ice out next weekend is opening fishing. What are the lakes looking like?
Well, they're going to have anglers are going to have open water. That's the good news.
That's
so
great.
It's always good. Lake Vermilion went out on April 30th, and that's usually one of the later lakes up here to go out. It's big, and Big Bay and Vermilion, which is the main body of the lake, tends to hold ice for a long time. A lot of folks were a little surprised. I know I was surprised to hear that it had gone out on April 30th. We'd been expecting probably the end of this week just because it's been quite cool and cloudy. But I guess when the ice wants to go, it goes. And most of the lakes around here now are ice-free. As of yesterday, Burnside Lake, which is a lot deeper lake than Vermilion, that still had some ice on it. But most of the other lakes, like Lake Habitogama up at the border, you know, that was clear. Crane Lake's been clear for a week. And so, you know, it's looking like by the time fishing opener rolls around, everything's going to be fully ice-free up here.
Sounds great. That's Marshall Helmberger. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. We'll check in with you next week, Marshall.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.